Usually, when we talk about the architecture of the universe, there's this, well, a fundamental expectation of presence.
Right, like a builder stacking bricks.
Exactly. The logic of reality just seems additive. You look at a planet or a star or even, an apple falling from a tree, and the assumption is that gravity exists because matter is simply there.
Yeah, mass occupies a location, energy occupies a location, and their very existence exerts a gravitational pull.
Right. It's a comforting, tangible way to view the cosmos. I mean, we really like our reality to exist in positive space.
We absolutely do. We are fundamentally wired to look at the stuff of the universe. And general relativity itself is completely built on this positive framework.
The Einstein field equations.
Right. They dictate that the stress energy tensor, which is really just the mathematical description of where mass and energy are distributed, tells space-time how to curve. You add mass, you add curvature.
It's an incredibly intuitive causal chain. But the moment you step out of macrophysics and, well, into the realm of quantum mechanics, that additive architectural model just shatters.
It really does.
We start looking at a theoretical landscape that is entirely inverted. So, welcome to this custom deep dive designed specifically for you, the theoretical physics student listening right now.
We've got a really dense stack of your notes and frameworks covering conditional collapse theory in front of us today.
Yeah, and the mission today is tackling the holy grail of modern physics unifying quantum mechanics and gravity. But we are going to do it by focusing entirely on the spaces where matter is not allowed to exist.
Because the paradigm shift in your notes proposes a fundamental reinterpretation of gravity. We're moving away from the idea that gravity is a product of mass merely occupying a coordinate.
Right.
The framework argues that the active continuous process of forbidding a mass-energy configuration from existing in a specific location, that's the actual mechanical engine driving space-time curvature.
Okay, let's ground this in standard quantum mechanics before we look at the inversion. Take a simple hydrogen atom. You have a central proton and you have an electron.
But that electron isn't a tiny billiard ball in a neat little orbit.
Exactly. It exists as a probability cloud, a superposition of all possible positions. Now, the nucleus itself is a physical location in space, yet the electron's wave function is structured in such a way that the core is essentially an off-limits zone.
The probability of finding the electron inside the nucleus is vanishingly small.
Yeah, and the standard model treats that spatial exclusion as just, well, a mundane boundary condition of atomic structure, like it's just the shape of the orbital.
But conditional collapse theory, or CCT, treats that exclusion as an active continuous collapse of the wave function. The universe is actively forbidding the electron from collapsing into the core position.
So the thesis is that this very act of cancellation, the removal of a quantum future where the electron occupies the nucleus, is what generates the gravitational field of that atom.
Precisely.
Wait, let me push back on the physical reality of that mechanism for a second. If we are saying the universe is actively forcing an electron to avoid a specific space, that implies an exertion of energy, right?
Yes, it does.
So if you constantly pump energy into forcing a quantum state away from the nucleus, wouldn't that massive injection of kinetic energy simply ionize the atom? Like, how does a stable hydrogen atom generate this gravitational effect without the electron just flying off into the void and tearing the system apart?
That is the exact friction point where quantum mechanics has to handshake with general relativity. I mean, the energy we're talking about isn't classical kinetic energy. It's not like a rocket firing thrusters to avoid a planet.
Oh, okay.
It is localized zero-point energy. By confining the wave function and forcing a boundary condition that excludes the core, you actually alter the vacuum expectation value in that specific region.
Right.
The atom doesn't ionize because this energy isn't available to do thermodynamic work. Instead, it manifests as a localized effective mass.
Ah. And in the language of general relativity, this localized effective mass feeds directly into the trace of the stress energy tensor.
Exactly. The atom remains perfectly stable, but the local geometry of space-time warps in response to the forbidden state.
So the space-time curvature is essentially the scar left behind by a canceled quantum future.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, usually we rely on that classic physics 101 analogy, right? Gravity is a heavy bowling ball sitting on a trampoline, creating a downward dip. But this mathematical framework requires us to visualize gravity as a vacuum.
Yeah, the dip in the trampoline isn't caused by the weight of a ball pressing down.
It's a hole created by the universe actively refusing to let the ball exist in that exact spot.
Right. In terms of quantum mechanics, we're looking at continuous destructive interference. Imagine the electron superposition as a branching path of derivative futures.
Okay.
Future A is the scenario where the electron's probability cloud overlaps the core. Future B is the scenario where it remains in the standard orbital shell. By applying destructive interference to future A, the system leaves a localized absence in position space.
And that structural void in the quantum probability field functions mathematically identically to a gravitational well. But wait, if gravity is literally just a hole left by a forbidden quantum state, how does that translate into a unified macroscopic force? Because a localized cancellation in a single atom doesn't really explain how the Earth pulls the moon.
Well, the sources you shared actually draw a rigorous mathematical and conceptual parallel to ferromagnetism to bridge that gap.
The magnetic parallel, right.
It's the key to understanding how these microscopic voids scale up. I mean, think about an unmagnetized piece of iron. You have billions of atomic magnetic moments, spins pointing in random conflicting directions.
So a spin pointing up cancels out a spin pointing down.
Exactly. Because of that chaotic distribution, there's no macroscopic magnetic field. The material is inert.
But the moment you apply an external field and magnetize that iron, you force a structural alignment. You compel all those atomic spins to point up.
And by doing that, you haven't just added something. You've systematically removed the anti-aligned down and futures from the entire lattice.
Right. The macroscopic magnetic field is just the result of uniformly forbidding the down end state across billions of atoms.
Yes, and mapping that logic onto our quantum gravity model reveals the macroscopic mechanism. In a massive body like the Earth, you have an astronomical number of atoms, each one continually aligning its electron's position space to uniformly avoid its respective core.
Wait, so if every single atom in a massive body is constantly excluding its electrons from the nucleus, does that mean every single atom is essentially a microscopic gravity generator?
Yes, absolutely. Every single one. Yeah. When you align all of those localized positional cancellations, they sum together geometrically.
Wow.
The collective uniform exclusion of the core future across an entire planet's worth of mass results in the macroscopic space-time curvature we experience as classical gravity.
That implication fundamentally rewrites Newton's law of universal gravitation. I mean, if this theory holds, gravity isn't proportional to the raw mass of two objects.
Not anymore.
It's proportional to the total excluded volume of quantum positions, multiplied by some coupling constant divided by the distance squared. We are literally swapping out mass for the sheer volume of forbidden quantum real estate.
The mathematical translation in your notes makes exactly that substitution. The mass term in the equations is entirely replaced by the integration of forbidden spatial configurations.
So if nature naturally generates gravity simply by forbidding electrons from occupying nuclear space, the engineering implications are, well, staggering.
They really are.
If we know the mechanism is exclusion, the immediate question for an experimental physicist is whether we can replicate that exclusion manually. Can we build a localized gravity generator on a lab bench?
Your notes provide a comprehensive blueprint for artificial gravity based on that exact premise. Because if space-time curvature is the necessary byproduct of a forbidden quantum state, you don't need exotic super-dense matter to create gravity.
You just need to engineer a macroscopic forbidden zone?
Right. You need to take a region of empty space and render it absolutely inaccessible to a dense field of probability clouds.
And the proposed method for building that wall relies on strong magnetic fields interacting with plasma.
Specifically, a magnetic mirror configuration. You start with a highly dense electron gas, or a pure electron plasma. Then you position a superconducting coil to create an incredibly steep, localized magnetic gradient.
Let's break down the mechanics of how that magnetic mirror actually forces the quantum exclusion, because it's not as simple as charged particles just bouncing off a wall.
No, it's not.
It comes down to the conservation of the magnetic moment, right? As an electron flies into the intensifying magnetic field, its perpendicular velocity, like the speed at which it spirals around the magnetic field lines, has to increase.
The conservation laws demand it, because the overall kinetic energy of the electron must remain constant in a static magnetic field. That increase in rotational perpendicular kinetic energy has to steal directly from the electron's forward parallel kinetic energy.
So as the electron pushes deeper into the magnetic gradient, its forward momentum bleeds away into rotational momentum until its forward velocity hits absolute zero.
Yes. And the electron reflects backward. It is a hard thermodynamic barrier. The plasma simply cannot penetrate the maximum point of that magnetic field.
And by establishing that impenetrable gradient, the engineering blueprint creates a macroscopic core. You've carved out a region of space and forced the wave functions of billions of surrounding electrons to collapse in a way that strictly avoids it.
Exactly.
But here's where it gets really interesting. The paradox here is beautifully counterintuitive. Everything we're taught about gravity centers on attraction. Matter pulls matter. But in this engineered framework, we're relying entirely on the physics of repulsion.
Right. Pushing things away.
Yeah. We are using a magnetic mirror to aggressively push electrons away from a target coordinate. And that violent repulsion, the sheer mathematical force of keeping probability clouds out of a zone, is the exact mechanism that generates the attractive pull of gravity. It turns standard physics completely upside down.
It completely reframes the engineering challenge of gravity manipulation. I mean, the strength of the gravitational field generated by this device wouldn't depend on how heavy the machine is.
Right.
It scales based on two entirely different parameters.
Yeah.
The total volume of the spatial cavity you've forbidden and the probability density of the plasma you are actively excluding from it.
As conceptually elegant as that is, the math is where a theoretical model either survives or dies. So let's look at the actual physics derivations in your framework to see how much gravity this repulsive mirror actually generates. It all traces back to the foundation of quantum mechanics, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Yes. The uncertainty principle states that the uncertainty in a particle's position multiplied by the uncertainty in its momentum must be greater than or equal to the reduced Planck constant divided by 2.
Right.
By using a magnetic mirror to rigidly forbid an electron from entering a specific macroscopic volume, you are severely confining its available position space. You're artificially shrinking the positional uncertainty of the electron's boundary state.
And nature abhors a free lunch. If you drive the positional uncertainty down by creating this rigid cavity, the momentum uncertainty must massively spike to balance the inequality.
And that resulting spike in momentum uncertainty is not theoretical abstract math. It is physical energy. It manifests as an intense localization of zero-point kinetic energy around the boundary of the forbidden zone.
Wow.
And this is where we bridge back to Einstein. Through mass-energy equivalence, E equals mc squared, that sharp increase in vacuum energy mathematically translates into an effective mass.
So the act of forcing the plasma to respect the boundary of the magnetic mirror injects localized energy into the geometry of space-time itself, reading as mass.
Yep.
The notes include a numerical reality check on this, and honestly, it is a brutal set of equations. Let's look at the proposed scenario. Creating a spherical forbidden region with a radius of just 1 millimeter inside a material with a massive electron density, like a standard copper wire.
Well, copper has roughly 8 times 10 to the 28th free electrons per cubic meter. When you run the integration to find the energy cost of mathematically excluding all of those wave functions from a 1 millimeter spherical volume, the resulting effective mass is shockingly small.
How small?
The calculation yields roughly 2.4 times 10 to the negative 31 kilograms.
Which is equivalent to a fraction of the mass of a single electron. If we plug an effective mass of 0.13 electron masses into Newton's classical gravity equation to see what kind of pull it exerts at a distance of 1 meter, the acceleration comes out to 1.6 times 10 to the negative 41 meters per second squared.
Yeah, gravitational field so incredibly weak, it is orders of magnitude beyond our ability to detect, let alone use for engineering.
This is sort of the crisis point of the deep dive. So what does this all mean for actually building something? To get Earth-like gravity, an acceleration of 9.8 meters per second squared, the math says we'd need to scale this up to absurd proportions.
Right.
We'd need to maintain a perfect magnetic exclusion zone a kilometer wide, or we'd need a plasma density matching the core of a neutron star. And neither of those is happening in a laboratory. So what's the third option? Does conditional collapse theory just die right here on the whiteboard?
It would, if not for the beta parameter. Throughout these equations, linking the spatial exclusion to the effective mass, there's an unknown coupling constant, represented as beta.
Okay.
The grim calculation we just discussed makes a standard conservative assumption. It assumes that the beta coupling constant scales linearly with the macroscopic size of the excluded volume, so the 1 millimeter radius.
But the framework proposes a radical alternative for beta, What if the coupling constant isn't tied to the macroscopic volume? What if it's fundamentally linked to the quantization of space-time itself, specifically like the Planck length?
Exactly. Standard quantum mechanics treats space-time as a smooth, continuous backdrop. But if gravity is a quantum phenomenon, space-time must have a discrete, pixelated geometry at the Planck scale, which is roughly 1.6 times 10 to the negative 35 meters.
Extremely tiny.
Right. If the universe operates on a discrete grid, then forbidding an electron from a 1 millimeter macroscopic sphere doesn't just mean excluding it from one continuous space. It means simultaneously forbidding the electron from occupying an unfathomable number of discrete Planck-sized positional microstates.
Oh, wow. So if the coupling constant is driven by the volume divided by the Planck volume, the mathematical multiplier just explodes.
It does.
Instead of a fractional multiplier, beta becomes astronomically huge. That same 1 millimeter exclusion zone, confined by the same magnetic mirror, would suddenly generate massive, highly detectable macroscopic gravity.
The disparity between those two interpretations of beta is the difference between a mathematical curiosity and a functional revolution in physics. The theory fundamentally cannot progress purely on paper anymore.
We have to test it.
The true nature of that coupling constant can only be resolved through physical observation.
And looking at these notes as a physics student, what stands out to you about this experimental design? I mean, you're probably already spotting the main engineering hurdle here, the noise floor.
Oh, absolutely.
If we build a tabletop experiment to measure this, and beta turns out to be on the weaker end of the spectrum, the gravitational anomaly we are trying to detect will be microscopic. Separating a quantum gravitational pull from, you know, the seismic noise of a truck driving down the street requires absurd sensitivity.
The proposed experimental setup addresses that noise floor through pretty elegant physics. It relies on a modified Penning trap to create the exclusion zone. You use a large superconducting coil to confine a dense electron plasma in a vacuum chamber.
So the plasma is our medium. Then, right in the center of that trapped electron cloud, you introduce the actual exclusion mechanism, a microsolenoid.
Right.
When energized, this tiny coil generates a massive localized magnetic maximum between 5 and 10 tesla over a microscopic volume of just 1 cubic millimeter.
Because the confined electrons only possess a thermal level of kinetic energy, they trigger the adiabatic reflection we discussed earlier long before they can breach the 5 tesla gradient.
So they reflect back.
That 1 cubic millimeter instantly becomes a rigid, mathematically pure, forbidden volume. The wave functions of the surrounding plasma collapse to perfectly map the boundary of that microcoil.
The void is established. Now we just have to measure it. To catch a microscopic gravitational force, the experimental design revives the torsion balance. The same conceptual tool Cavendish used to weigh the Earth in the 18th century, but upgraded with modern interferometry.
Yeah, you suspend a 1 kilogram test mass made of something entirely non-magnetic, like gold-plated tungsten, on a microscopic fused silica fiber, positioning it just 1 centimeter away from the plasma trap.
And the sensitivity of a modern torsion balance is staggering. It can detect forces down to 10 to the negative 15 newtons.
But even with that sensitivity, thermal drift and environmental vibrations would normally swamp the gravitational signal of the forbidden zone.
Which is why we don't just leave the exclusion coil turned on, we modulate it. We pulse the 1 cubic millimeter forbidden zone on and off at a very specific low frequency, say exactly 0.1 hertz.
Right.
And here is the genius part. You feed the laser readout from the torsion balance into a lock-in amplifier.
The lock-in amplifier is the ultimate filter. It uses phase-sensitive detection.
Exactly. Sorry, to build on that. The lock-in amplifier takes the incredibly noisy signal from the twisting tungsten mass and continuously multiplies it by a clean, pure 0.1 hertz reference wave, integrating the result over time.
Yeah.
Every random piece of noise, seismic vibrations, thermal shifts, magnetic interference, it all fluctuates at random frequencies and phases. When multiplied and integrated against the reference wave, all that noise just averages out to absolute zero.
The only signal that survives the math is a force that is pulling the test mass at precisely 0.1 hertz.
The stakes riding on that filtered signal are definitive. If the lock-in amplifier runs for weeks and registers a strict null result, it firmly bounds the beta parameter. It proves that space-time curvature does not scale with the discrete Planck geometry, rendering the conditional collapse theory practically unengineerable.
But if the lock-in amplifier catches a signal, if the 1 kilogram tungsten mass begins swaying at exactly 0.1 hertz, perfectly phase-locked to the pulsing of the magnetic mirror.
It would be the first empirical proof in human history that localized quantum exclusion generates macroscopic gravity. We would have essentially built the first artificial gravity generator.
We would transition from observing gravity as a passive property of mass to engineering gravity as an active manipulation of probability space.
It's just a phenomenal theoretical journey. We start by looking at the electron's probability cloud and realizing the nucleus is essentially a structural void in the wave function.
Right.
We mapped that quantum positional exclusion to the structural alignment of ferromagnetism, proving that microscopic cancellations can scale into uniform macroscopic fields. We explored how adiabatic reflection in a magnetic mirror could artificially force that wave function collapse.
And the mathematical bridge between Heisenberg's uncertainty principle and Einstein's stress energy tensor showed us how localized vacuum energy manifests as effective mass.
Yeah, and finally, the phase-sensitive torsion balance experiment provides a highly credible roadmap for isolating that beta coupling constant. It redefines the mechanics of reality. But before we finish, your notes suggest one final implication that drastically scales up this entire framework.
Oh, the astrophysical implications.
Right. We've been analyzing this theory inside 1-millimeter laboratory plasma traps. But what happens if we apply the logic of conditional collapse to the astrophysics of the cosmos?
Well, we have to reevaluate the vacuum of space itself. If space-time curvature is fundamentally generated by regions where quantum states are forbidden, we can no longer view the void between stars as merely empty distance.
Right. Normally, astrophysics assumes dark matter is some exotic, undiscovered particle wimps forming massive, invisible halos around galaxies, providing the extra gravitational pull needed to keep the outer stars from flying apart.
But if we follow the logic of this negative space theory, what if dark matter isn't a particle at all?
If the universe contains vast, naturally occurring macroscopic regions where specific quantum states are structurally forbidden from entering, those regions would possess immense effective mass. They would violently warp the space-time around them.
We would detect massive, inexplicable gravitational halos holding entire galaxies together, all without a single particle of actual matter being present. The empty space itself would be pulling on the stars.
It's a profound inversion of how we view the cosmos. Dark matter wouldn't be a mysterious heavy sand filling the universe. It would be an ocean of forbidden probability.
It demands a complete recalibration of observational astrophysics. The missing mass of the universe might simply be the mathematical shadow of excluded futures.
It brings us right back to the architecture of the universe. When we look up at the night sky, we are so conditioned to hunt for the bricks. We look for the matter, the glowing stars, the dense gas clouds. But maybe the true shape of reality, the heaviest, most dominant structural force in the cosmos, is actually hiding in negative space, the holes we aren't allowed to fill, the reality we are forbidden to occupy. Keep chipping away at that marble. Until next time.